I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. A couple of years ago, the Baltimore Sun reported that the Veterans Office here was the slowest in the country to process disability claims and the most error-prone. On average, servicemen and women faced wait times of an entire year. In this hour, we get an update on progress at Baltimore's VA. Have they been able to reduce the massive backlog of claims? And what changes have they made to prevent mistakes in the future? Reporter Yvonne Wenger of The Sun fills us in. Plus, ahead of the American Legion's 97th National Convention, expected to bring 10,000 veterans and service members to Baltimore, we hear about the Legion's work on education, employment, and health care for veterans. That's coming up on Midday after the news. Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome back to the Midday Show. Dan Rodericks here. Happy to be with you. Thanks for making Midday part of your day. In the second hour of our show today, from 1 to 2 p.m., we'll be speaking with journalist Sam Quinones. He spent the last 10 years writing for the L.A. Times. He's written for a bunch of newspapers. He's got a really interesting, I would say fascinating and disturbing book about heroin in the United States, and not the heroin you normally think of in inner cities, in cities like Baltimore, but in small towns and small cities across the country. And the Mexican guys who figured out how to market their particular type of heroin to middle America, and why we have a heroin epidemic in this country. So it's very interesting. Sam's book is called Dreamland. He'll be with us in the second hour of our show today. In this hour of the show, we're going to focus on veterans and veterans affairs, because next Tuesday marks the kickoff of the American Legion's 97th National Convention. And guess where it's being held? It's being held in Baltimore. It's expected to draw thousands of the nation's veterans to the convention center here. Robert McDonald, Secretary of the Department of Veterans Affairs, the U.S. Defense Secretary Ashton Carter are expected to speak. The former Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel will be there. Governor Larry Hogan gets to speak. The mayor of Baltimore, Stephanie Rawlings Blake, among others, Congressman Elijah Cummings. It's a big event. Next starts on Tuesday. And the American Legion is hosting a couple events before the convention starts. You might be interested in. There's a color guard competition open to the public at the convention center. That's tomorrow at 5 o'clock. And a parade on Sunday afternoon, if it's nice weather, 4 p.m., go down to Pratt Street near the National Aquarium. And there'll be a parade as the American Legion Convention comes to town. I don't know if anybody knew this. This is kind of a big deal. This is thousands of Legionnaires coming to Baltimore. So later this hour, we'll talk to some about some of the issues that the American Legion is working on. Veterans struggling to find jobs, why the American Legion is focused on apprenticeships and entrepreneurships. We'll hear about that. And also the Legion's response to the scandal last year that resulted in the resignation of the Secretary of the VA, Eric Shinseki. First, I want to get an update on how the VA office in Baltimore is doing. You might remember a couple of years ago, my colleague from the Baltimore Sun, Yvonne Wenger, did a series of stories about the Baltimore Office of Veterans Affairs being among the worst in the country at processing disability claims and making a lot of mistakes, being the most error-prone in the country. Yvonne is with us today to give us an update on how the VA is doing here. Nice to see you, Yvonne. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So how did we determine 2 years ago? I never talked to you about this story you did. It was a really interesting story, kind of depressing, really. How did we figure out that we had one of the worst VA offices in the country?
So I had done a big piece on Social Security Administration and the backlog there and the time that it took. And after that article ran, I got multiple phone calls from people who said, you think Social Security's bad? You need to look at the VA. And so I was at the time covering social services, and I had the time to start poking around a little bit. And I made an appointment with a Bethesda-based law firm that handled disability claims. And the guy had worked at the VA, and he walked me through all of the data that's online. And so I got back to the office, and I was digging around, and I looked, and I said, oh, my gosh, Baltimore has the most errors in the country. And then I looked at the backlog and I said, Baltimore has the highest percentage of the backlog.
The highest percentage of veterans...
disability claims.
Backlogged a year or
four
how
months. So
4 months.
The backlog for the VA is considered any case that's at least 125 days old, which is about 4 months. And so that's what they characterize as cases that are backlogged. And so they had the highest percentage of cases backlogged in the country.
And the most number of errors in
yes.
the processing of these claims. Now, these
exactly.
are specifically disability claims.
Yes.
So veterans who are disabled from service, disabled in some way, and are entitled to benefits from our government.
Exactly.
So what was the explanation at the time for why this took so long? Because some were waiting a year or more, right?
Years.
Years, plural.
Yeah. Yeah, years. So the VA got into a tremendous backlog situation across the entire country. And one of the reasons, there's a few reasons that have been, you know, put forward. One is that for the first time, the VA was accepting Agent Orange claims. So you had a flood of Vietnam era veterans who were for the first time able to get disability benefits for Agent Orange related diseases and illnesses. The second reason was you had all of the veterans coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan with the highest number of claims per veteran and complex injuries that the VA hadn't seen in previous wars because of medical advancements were able to save more veterans' lives. So they were coming home with multiple injuries and really complex symptoms. And so you created this backlog across the country. One explanation I was given for the specific backlog in the Baltimore office, which serves all of Maryland's veterans, there's 450,000 veterans in Maryland, and they some of my reporting showed that there was a certain percentage of staff members in the local VA office who were deployed to work on cases from outside of the office. And so there was fewer people to process Maryland veterans claims at the same time that you were getting Agent Orange claims and these complex.
You mean they were assigned to take cases from other states?
Exactly.
Even though we had a backlog here.
Yeah, as the backlog was growing.
So this backlog was a national backlog. This has been a problem nationally. It's just that Baltimore happened to have the worst rate.
Yes, at the time in January 2013, when I started looking at the data, I discovered that Baltimore was the very worst in the country.
I noticed one of the stories I remember that you had questioned whether some veterans actually had died.
Yeah.
Waiting for disability claims.
Yeah.
What did you find out? Recall that story for us.
I had a really hard time getting information from the VA. That was a story. There had been an outlet in California that had done a similar story revealing the number of veterans there who had died. And of course, I found the very same thing in Baltimore. I think I have that story here with me, and I'll try
what
to find.
What I remember was that they were reluctant to release that information.
They were
right?
very reluctant to release that information. It took weeks to get it. And in fact, they only released it after I had written one article saying that they refused to give it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And did you determine, I don't want to spend a lot of time on that, but you did determine that some veterans had died while waiting for their claim to be processed?
Yeah. And that the families were left to fight that battle to get, you know, benefits on their behalf.
Hmm. So what's happened since then? This was January 2013, when those stories rolled out, Yvonne Wenger. So what's happened since then?
So immediately after the original article, which outlined the problem, Senator Mikulski called a big meeting among White House officials, VA Secretary at the time, Eric Shinseki, in Baltimore and said, we need to come up with an action plan. She and other members of the delegation, specifically Senator Cardin, wrote some strongly worded letters, and then they called this meeting, and they ordered an action plan, which included, you know, plans to immediately increase training and start working through the backlog. So,
not hiring more staff.
They eventually did hire more staff.
They did hire more staff?
They did.
Did they change the leadership here?
They did. They did all of those things.
So the person who was in charge of the office here, that person changed?
Yes.
And so what can we say about the improvement since then? Has there been an improvement?
So I reported earlier this month, the VA called a press conference, and I was actually the only reporter there, which was surprising. But the new director, Antone Waller, released some statistics saying that they had reduced the backlog claims by nearly 60%, in numbers that dropped the claims from 6,000 that were at least 4 months old to 2,600. And then they had dramatically dropped their error rate from a high of 26% to 16%.
Well, that's pretty good. 16% waiting 4 months or longer. Is that right? Is that still the measure?
So 16% is the error rate.
Oh, the error rate.
Sorry.
Okay.
And
this says the backlog. I'm just looking at your story here. The backlog for Maryland veterans is about 17% compared with about 30% across the country. That's the backlog of cases.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You're citing the error rate.
Yeah.
So the error rate came down significantly, they claim.
Yeah. So that's and just the as we're talking about these statistics, one of the concerns that I have, not having had a lot of time to delve into these numbers, is we all know the trouble with statistics is that they can be made to look one way or another. Mm-hmm. And after this article came out on August 5th, I got multiple phone calls from veterans who said,
don't believe them.
Don't believe them. They don't have a good track record. They've not been honest with us before.
The issue with the errors, that means that creates the backlog, right? So you make an error processing a claim, that means that you got to go back and work on it again.
Exactly.
Right?
So the big thing that we all need to be watching at the VA in Baltimore and across the country is what's happening with appeals. And so they might be processing initial claims faster, but if they're denying them and then the veteran, you know, has to go back and appeal, they're still waiting years to get resolution on the appeals. Another thing
that's an important point. It's not like a given that you're going to get these benefits. They turn you down and then the veteran's family goes back and asks another time, appeals the ruling, right?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And I'm trying to put my finger on that number, but it's something like an average of, I want to say, 4 years.
Who did you talk to when you were doing these stories?
Lots of people.
Yeah, can you cite an example of somebody that you wrote about who was waiting for their claim to be processed?
Yeah, the primary example I used in the initial article was a man who had served in Iraq and had gotten he was suffering from PTSD. He was doing counterintelligence work, and that's what he had spent his whole career doing. And so after suffering from PTSD, he found it hard to work in that field because any of the counterintelligence stuff he was doing, even back home, was triggering all of the PTSD issues that he was having. And he was denied for multiple years. And within a couple of days after the article ran, he was given full disability.
Mm-hmm. Good. Well, you got a pretty good reaction there. I'm not surprised. Well, I'm disappointed to hear you're the only reporter at that press conference, because this is a concern to a lot of people, 450,000 veterans in Maryland. So you're going to do some further checking to see if this is accurate? This improvement is accurate?
Yeah, I'd really like to stay on it. Another thing I wanted to mention about things that we should all be paying attention to is that as Baltimore has been dropping its backlog on disability claims, they've shifted 20% of their workload to other regions, which is a common thing that's happened in the VA, is when one office gets a lot of attention for having trouble, they start shifting the claims elsewhere.
Is there any issue with that? Does it matter that somebody's in Tucson is working on a Baltimore case?
So there's like a couple of ways to think about it. So some advocates say, one in this article I had written had described it like, if you were at the grocery store and you had long lines for a cashier, you would go to the line. You would go to the cashier with the shortest line.
You would hope that they'd open up another line,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. They don't always do that. But there was a concern from the VFW that I think is really important to consider, which is the way the VA tracks the cases is by office where they're waiting, not cases originating in different offices. So if you now have a backlog in Tucson or whatever, it could include Maryland veterans who are waiting longer because they're in the backlog
before
that office.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it kind of makes sense to farm out some of the work if there's a backlog at a particular long backlog at a specific VA office.
Yeah.
All right, Yvonne, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Yvonne, are you going to cover the American Legion Convention for the Sun?
My colleague Ian Duncan will be there.
Ian Duncan, all right, because he had the story about it today. All right, Yvonne Wenger from the Baltimore Sun. This is Midday, folks. Dan Roderick's here. Please stay with us. We'll talk some more about Veterans Affairs going forward here as the American Legion Convention comes to town on Tuesday. We'll be joined by two national directors of the AL coming up after this short break. So welcome back, everyone. Dan Roderick's here. It's the Midday Show. If you have any comments or questions during this hour about Veterans Affairs and the American Legion Convention coming to town, 410-662-8780 is our local number. Toll-free long distance, 866-661-9309. And our email address is midday@wypr.org. The American Legion is almost 100 years old. 1919, right? Yeah, we're just a few years away from their centennial. The organization has more than 2 million members, and I remember, I do remember the Vietnam War, and I remember people talking at the end of the Vietnam War about how, well, the American Legion is probably going to fold someday because Vietnam veterans aren't interested in the American Legion, and it turns out, I think, Vietnam veterans, I read, are the largest membership now. Is that possible?
That's exactly correct. They make up the largest number of our members right now.
That's Lou Celli. Lou is in the studio with us along with Joe Sharp. Hello, Joe.
Hello.
Nice to have you both with us. They're both national directors from the American Legion. Lou Celli had a 22-year career with the Army, and after leaving the military, he founded a leadership training company and eventually ended up devoting most of his time to helping veterans become entrepreneurs. That's pretty interesting. We got to talk about that a little bit today, Lou. And Joe was 14 years in the Army in the medical field, right?
Yes.
In Germany, and then you ended up at Walter Reed here near D.C.
Right, and yeah. I have 16 years as a reservist as well, so 30 years altogether.
Way to go, Joe. And I see you went to Johns Hopkins.
Yes.
What did you study at Johns Hopkins?
International relations and economics.
Okay, and let me ask you both this. So, Joe, you're a national director with the American Legion. So, what do they have you assigned to doing?
Well, I'm the director of the Veteran Affairs Employment and Education Division.
Employment and Education. And how about you, Lou?
I oversee the VA portfolio, basically.
What does that mean?
It means we have several streams of work that we take care of. We take care of claims, as your last guest was discussing. We also take care of appeals. We also help veterans access their health care. We also deal with mortuary affairs. We also do discharge upgrades for veterans who get out and feel that their DD-214, their exit paperwork, is incorrect for whatever reason, whether it's they're missing medals or they're missing assignments or they feel that their discharge wasn't in an honorable status the way it should be, and we help them fix that.
Boy, that's a lot.
It's a lot.
Lou. What did you think about the last session we just had with Yvonne Wenger from The Sun? I mean, that particular issue of the backlogs of disability claims. Do you think there's been improvement in the last couple of years?
There has been an improvement. I think she did an excellent job in her reporting. And one of the things that that she did not mention is the close proximity, you know, between Baltimore and the D.C. area. And D.C. doesn't have its own regional office. So by default, Baltimore ends up absorbing a lot of D.C.'s claims as well. Hmm. So they get double hit. And in addition, if there's a Baltimore employee working at the regional office and they see a more shining opportunity in D.C. working at the VA headquarters, they'll often try to compete for those positions because it's within a reasonable commuting distance. She was very right about Antoine, who, you know, recently...
Antoine Waller?
Waller, correct. That recently,
who's the new director here.
That's right. He had come in from St. Paul and was able to show that St. Paul was really one of the model regional offices. So, and that's why they brought him in, because he had a track record of being able to do well.
I want to ask you something. I meant to go over this with Yvonne, but I don't want to assume that everyone understands veteran applying for disability benefits.
Correct.
It can be service-related or not?
Well,
or is it, does it have to be service-related?
So in some instances, veterans can be compensated for non-service-connected injuries, but it's a rarity. Most of the claims that we're talking about really involve service-connected injuries. That's the backlog that we're dealing with.
Okay. So that would be, as she mentioned, Agent Orange cases, because that was finally recognized by the VA, and then related to Iraq and Afghanistan.
Correct. Right? And the Agent Orange cases that she discussed really have pretty much been taken care of. You know, that large influx that VA, had let people know that had created some of this backlog, that had been dealt with because those were presumptive illnesses. Those had been processed, and we're past that now.
Okay, we're past that. What about overall, would you say? Because I remember when this story out of Phoenix boiled over, we had Shinseki's resignation,
right.
Long wait times for people
right.
to see doctors, to get into clinics. It just was it was a national embarrassment, really
was.
So where would you say we are 2 years from that?
Well, keep in mind that we're talking about two separate types of backlog. The backlog that we were dealing with when General Shinseki was in charge of the VA dealt with access to health care.
Right.
We had veterans that could not get the care that they needed, which is why the American Legion called for the resignation of the secretary, and subsequently you saw what happened. And in addition to that, we were a large supporter and really some of the founding authorship of the CHOICE Act that sought to let veterans go out and get that health care that they needed as a release valve for the VA so that those veterans could get the care they needed before they got worse and, mm-hmm. and became more ill.
PTSD, traumatic brain injury,
sure.
all that stuff. And so that's separate from the other issue we were talking about, which was disability claims.
Well,
before we go on, let's tell our listeners a little bit about American Legion Convention. How many Legionnaires do you expect to have in town here?
Between 8 and 12,000.
Wow, okay. And has the American Legion Convention been in Baltimore before?
We have. It was in the 80s.
Was it in the 1980s? Okay. I've been saying Tuesday that it opens. Actually, the convention opens on Monday.
It does.
And for the public, I mentioned a parade on Sunday afternoon.
That's correct.
Okay. 4 o'clock?
That's correct.
Down on Pratt Street near the right. National Aquarium. Okay. And I mentioned a color guard competition. 5 o'clock tomorrow night.
Right.
Okay. So I wanted to talk about a few things with you today. Since I mentioned PTSD, traumatic brain injury, on this show over the last few years, we've talked a lot about PTSD. Actually, haven't done it in a few months, but we've had several shows on that topic because it's of great concern. It's very disturbing what's been going on. The suicide rate among veterans. I just noticed a story about female veterans and the suicide rate there being 6 times higher than what it is for the female population generally in the United States. So, I mean, what can we say about that in terms of outreach? You were just talking a little bit about access to health care.
Correct.
What's going on there? Are veterans not seeking help? They can't get it fast enough? What's happening?
Well, there's a variety of factors. The American Legion just recently conducted a survey that we're just compiling the information on now. It's the second of such surveys that we've done. We did one 2 years ago that asks veterans, what type of care are you getting with your PTSD and your traumatic brain injury care portfolio within the VA? Tell us about the medications you're taking. Tell us about the regimen of care that you're receiving, and how did that care work for you? What suggestions and recommendations do you have for other veterans that are going through similar instances and circumstances? Some of the things that we're finding is that veterans in some cases are so dissatisfied with some of the care that they're getting that they stop going because there's too much time between appointments. And those are some of the things that we're addressing with VA. We will present our findings directly to VA and let them know what the veterans are telling us. It's our members. We polled about 2,000 veterans. And as I said earlier, we're culling through that information now.
And Joe Sharp, what are your views on that? Do you have any reflections on that particular problem that veterans face?
Well, of course, we're very concerned in that regard because our whole portfolio deals with employment issues and anything that may hamper a veteran from being gainfully employed. So PTSD is a huge issue for us as well.
I was reading about the suicide rate, getting into the details of it. It's not always combat related. It's not always this war is hell and I'm traumatized and that's related to this decision to end a life. It can be all kinds of things related to being away from home, adjustment after service to civilian life.
Well, definitely, and especially if there are other issues that they may be facing, like unemployment, which is huge.
Well, let's talk about that.
Homelessness.
Let's switch to that, because we hear a lot about veterans and unemployment. Veterans can't find a job, and veterans become homeless. In Baltimore, we see that here in the city. Why? You've been at this for a few years, so do you have a thought about why it's particularly acute among veterans?
Of course, because for veterans who are serving their country, they're really spending most of their time, protecting the nation, and they don't have the ability to be able to, either get a licensing or certification for a particular occupation or finish their degree or even network. And so they're behind the curve. So our big issue is to make sure that we level the playing field by making sure that those veterans have an opportunity to be gainfully employed and catch up with the rest of the civilian sector.
Mm-hmm. Tell us how you're doing that, because I know there's two words here, apprenticeships and entrepreneurship, I wanted to talk to you about.
Well, for example, for our national convention, we're doing a two-day Boots to Business program in conjunction with SBA, Small Business Administration, and University of Syracuse to help those individuals who either want to start a business or grow a business.
Hmm.
We're also doing a two-day employment event Monday.
Like a job fair.
Exactly. Hmm. And we're also doing a networking lunch for veterans to be able to talk with HR directors from various federal agencies and the private sector. We're also doing a couple of workshops, one taught by the Department of Labor, which is going to deal with those veterans that may want to work for the federal government. And we also have a huge corporations like General Electric, which is going to talk to veterans about who want to be hired by the private sector. So both of those programs are going on Monday and Tuesday. They're free to the public. The job fair will be on Tuesday from 1 to 4. We have about 60 companies that will participate in that. And all companies that will be participating are those that have actual jobs for veterans. Plus, we also will have a number of organizations that do primary apprenticeships and training for veterans. A lot of veterans aren't aware that a lot of these programs are out there. So, we highly encourage veterans in this area to come out for that.
Yes, I'm glad you're mentioning all this, Joe Sharp. So, listeners, if you know somebody in a situation looking for a job who's a veteran, they may not even know they may not be a member of the American Legion yet, and they may not know about the convention. So all this is happening at Convention Center, you said, Monday and Tuesday.
Monday and Tuesday. The actual events will take place at the Baltimore Hilton, which is physically attached to the Convention Center. And we'll have employers there really for 2 days for individuals to be able to work on their resumes, talk to various employers to see what type of jobs that they have available, how they may meet those jobs, and then talk to other organizations to get those crucial certifications that they may need.
I don't want to take for granted that we understand why this is a problem with veterans. You go away, you serve your country sometimes for 4 years, 8 years, 12 years, and all your training is in the military, and maybe you don't come out with the skills that you need for the private sector, right?
Exactly.
So very good. Thank you for going over that, Joe Sharp. I'm glad you're doing this, and the word relevant comes up here, American Legion, trying to be relevant to the 21st century and veterans today.
Well, Dan, and I'm glad you mentioned the fact that that you don't have to be an American Legion member in order to participate in a lot of these events. As a matter of fact, we're also hosting a Veterans Benefits Center. So if veterans are having problems with their claims, if they're one of those claims that's stuck at the Baltimore Regional Office and they don't know what's going on with it, they're welcome to come in and speak to us, and we'll be able to look up their claim and we'll be able to find out what's going on with it.
410-662-8780. This is the Midday Show. With me in the studio is Joe Sharp, who's a national director of the American Legion, and also Lou Celli. Lou, it says here you previously served as legislative director for the American Legion. That means you're the lobbyist?
That's correct.
Whenever you see that phrase,
lobbyist.
Legislative director,
that's right.
It always means lobbyist, right?
That's right.
Okay, thank you very much. Nice to have you with us, Lou. I want to hear about entrepreneurship in veterans a little bit, too, since you delved into that. Let's take a call. Antonio, who's listening on 88.1 FM out in Frederick. Hello, Antonio.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, you know, I am calling as I am the brother of a Marine who's been home now for almost a little over like a year and a half now, and I and my family were frustrated because we feel that I feel that my little brother was sort of identified at a very young age in high school by the military to, you know, that, no, you've got to do this, and we're going to promise you this, and we're going to, when you get out of here, you know, you're, you know, going to the military is better than going to school. And they let him go early, and now he didn't even want to graduate high school. He just wanted to go straight into the military. He's now pretty, he's got some injuries that he won't let us see him shirtless. He goes on long runs at like 3 a.m. And he's 20 years old and he's lost. He doesn't know what to do. We don't know what to do. And I'm just frustrated because where is the military now? You know, who do I go to, you know, to report with my little brother and say, you know, help us?
Excuse me, Antonio, thank you for calling. Stay on the line. I want to ask you a couple of questions. You said your brother was 20. How old is he now?
He just turned 21.
And where is he living?
He lives in Phoenix. I'm just outside of Baltimore and Frederick, and so, you know, every time that I come home, you know, it's no longer for pleasure, because, you know, when I'm there, it's these very heated conversations about, you know, what are you doing? I did some research. Have you done this? But it's almost like he's been so entrained to, you know, that he's got to do this on his own, that he doesn't want to ask for any help. Yet he's so young and doesn't have the life skills. You know, he knows how to handle, some serious weaponry, and he knows how to, you know, fight, but just basic life skills and following up and, you know, being patient and figuring out how to, you know, how to be a part of, you know, society, right, is like, it's beyond him.
Let's hear from Lou Celli.
So, Antonio, we actually see this a lot. And, you know, when veterans return from difficult situations, whether it's combat-related or not, they often have trouble reintegrating back into society. There are a lot of different programs that are available to your brother. And, you know, what I would recommend is to ask your brother to call a local vet center. Not only could they contact the American Legion and get involved with veterans who have been through some of the exact same experiences he's been through.
A peer, someone his age almost?
That's exactly right. You know, we have, you know, there's peer representation. The vet centers that are part of the VA network have a non-confrontational and non-recorded, if that's what you want, session where you can sit down with someone, have a peer counseling session, and also have access to those resources at VA that he may not even realize are available to him.
Can we ask, Antonio, have you tried that already? Have you? So, I mean, you say the difficulty is getting your brother to admit he needs some help and to seek help, right?
There's that, and then there's also, you know, I think my family and I are sort of at a loss because, you know, is there a resource center for if you're a family member of a service member, where I can educate myself, you know, and sort of, you know, be running through this side by side with my little brother, you know, tag teaming this.
Is there help alone? I just want to make sure, understand, your brother has not sought help yet from the VA or from.
He's attempting on his own. And you know, when we get home and we try to ask him about these, you know, I'll try to ask, you know, well, you know, what was the last, you know, letter that you got back? Let me see that. You know, what's going on with your GI Bill? What's going on with the VA so that we can get your shoulder looked at, you know, so that you can, so that we can help you deal with, you know, this anger management.
All right, all right, Antonio. I'm sorry, I just had to ask a few questions, but we keep them on the line. Lou and Joe, go ahead, Lou.
See,
again. And
Antonio,
then Joe.
I'd like to offer our Washington, D.C.-based phone number that you can offer to your brother, where we can, at a minimum, you know, not it would be very unopposing. He would not be calling for social counseling, but we would be able to offer him the resources that he could use, not only to get assistance with his GI Bill. I mean, the American Legion has over 3,500 accredited representatives across the country that sit down and work with people just like your brother to help them get the benefits that they have earned and are entitled to.
Hmm.
Our Washington number is 202-861-2700. And you can also find us at www.legion.org. And he can find a local representative in the Phoenix area, or he's welcome to call us here in Washington, D.C.
What about for families who just want to talk to somebody? Like Antonio, say he wants to talk to somebody from the VA or American
Absolutely.
Legion.
Same thing.
Use the same number?
The same number for family members, and in addition, the vet centers. The vet centers will absolutely speak to family members.
And in the case of Antonio's brother, who's in Phoenix, I assume he means Phoenix, Arizona, not Phoenix, Maryland. They would refer to somebody in Arizona for him? Or?
Well, what would happen is if, let's say Antonio called us from Phoenix, Arizona, we would work with him directly, and then we would find a representative that works with the American Legion out in Phoenix, and we would do a warm handoff. We would call our representative out there and have our representative call Antonio.
Okay. I hope that's helpful. Joe, did you have a thought about Antonio and his brother?
Well, there's another resource that they can go to, and that's the local employment office. Every local employment office in the country has representatives that deal strictly with veterans that have employment issues and any other issues that they may need to take care of.
Mm-hmm. Antonio, before I let you go, do you find your brother to be depressed, not motivated? You say he's a runner. He goes out and runs early in the morning, but what would you say about his attitude?
His attitude, he's very insular at this moment. Like, you know, he's sort of conflicted because he's done some things and he's seen some things, but you know, he's somewhere between like a boy and a boy with these really, really horrible experiences, you know. Mm-hmm. So he's like super conflicted, not very motivated. He's just hard to reach, you know.
Well, why don't you try that number?
Yeah, actually, if you could. So there was 202-861-2700. 861-2700. Thank you so much, guys. I really appreciate it.
All right. Good luck, Antonio, and good luck with your brother. This is the Midday Show. Dan Roderick's here with two national directors of the American Legion, the American Legion Convention, coming into town this weekend and next week. 410-662-8780. More with Joe Sharp and Lou Celli when we get back after this short break. And welcome back to Midday. Again, our phone number, 410-662-8780. It's an interesting conversation there with Antonio from Frederick. I'm glad he called here to get some help. Lou Celli and Joe Sharp with me in the studio. A veteran who doesn't want to ask for help. That sounds like, I don't know, I've heard that before, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it's ominously reminiscent of the Vietnam era. And that's why the veteran centers were created by the VA specifically to have peer-to-peer counseling from veterans who wanted to be able to sit down with other veterans who had been through the same experiences.
Hmm. And some mistrust of the government didn't want to go to the Veterans Administration necessarily?
Which was, yeah, that was a big problem during Vietnam. You know, the government was not considered the pinnacle of trust, and Vietnam veterans did not want to be associated with the government, and they wanted really a place that was safe, and that's what the vet centers had created for them.
By the way, Joe, was I correct when I said that Vietnam era veterans are the largest part of the American Legion membership now?
That's correct.
Yeah, because I remember what people were saying at the Vietnam War, because there's such a generational divide there, and the experience was so totally different than it had been in World War II with those veterans, that the American Legion may, you know, would decline. But that hasn't been the case.
Right. And our second largest group, of course, is the post 9/11 generation.
Right. Now, so I'm curious about that. So younger guys in their 20s don't run out and join the American Legion, or do you see some of that now? Is this something veterans gravitate to as they get older?
Well, you know, I think there are several reasons that our largest population right now is Vietnam veterans. Vietnam veterans are coming into the periods of their lives where their children have graduated, they have more time on their hands, are starting to retire, and can donate some of their personal time back to the community. And that's what the American Legion's all about. We're the largest veteran service organization in the nation, and we are a grassroots organization. We work directly with the veterans at the grassroots levels, and it takes people to do that. You know, we have 5,000 posts across the nation, and if you want to become involved in a veterans issue, the American Legion is more than happy to work with you.
And we try to take a holistic approach, especially with veterans who are transitioning out of the military. Most of them are married now with families, which is different from the Vietnam generation. And we have so many services that to help that veteran and their family that's something that we really try to stress on them.
I was walking past the American Legion post in Locust Point just last week and saw the sign on the outside that they were collecting school supplies for kids.
Sure.
Just another example of what the AL does. Bill in Newmarket wanted to call in and tell and make a suggestion off of our last phone call with Antonio. Bill, thanks for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. One of the things that I found helpful in my career, and I've done some counseling, listening to Antonio, is sometimes the way we speak to people, especially our relatives, comes across as, I want you to tell me how you're doing on this stressful issue, this detail. I think if Antonio would spend more time, and maybe he has, talking to his brother on, what do you want to do? What interests you? Do you like cars? Do you want to be a mechanic? And he may know some of these answers. But rather than holding people accountable for details that we know they should be doing, maybe to step back and just talk person to person without any stress and to talk about what you'd like to do, to find an interest, because that's where the motivation is going to come from.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that suggestion. It is a good suggestion. Come in non-judgmental and just listen. Actually, I think what you're getting at is listening, right? So important. Thank you very much, Bill. I hope Antonio was listening to that. Tim in Baltimore with a comment for us. Hi, Tim.
Hey, good afternoon. How you doing?
Good, thanks.
In reference to hiring vets, I've had the want to try to hire a vet. And it's a very cumbersome process, I found. You know, I was transferred to San Francisco, and we're local.
What kind of business, Tim, what kind of business do you have?
Construction, you know, like looking for mechanics and things like that. Mm-hmm. That have had some training in the military, and I don't know how to go get them.
So when you tried in the past, what did you call, the VA?
No, not VA. It's actually... what they have is kind of a almost like a headhunters thing where we pay fees and all that kind of stuff, and it's not run by the government.
Because you wanted to hire a veteran.
Yeah, just, you know, the guys have served their time. If we can give them an opportunity, and hell, we're right here in the Middle Atlantic. It's a perfect area.
There must be an easier way than having hiring a headhunter who can find a veteran for you. Do you have a suggestion, Joe Sharp?
Well, we encourage employers to work with the Department of Labor. Again, all your one-stop offices, employment centers have counselors that deal strictly with veterans, and they have individuals who perform primarily. Their primary duty is to work with employers, mm-hmm. and connect those employers with unemployed veterans.
Okay,
that come to them. So I would encourage him to do that.
Hmm. Tim, what are you doing on Monday and Tuesday?
I don't I'm not sure.
Well, maybe I mean, maybe if you have time, you ought to go to the job fair down at the convention center at the American Legion convention and schmooze around a little bit. Maybe you'll find somebody looking for a job, huh?
Well, we still have space for companies who are interested in hiring veterans, so we can get you a free booth.
Terrific.
What do you think of that, Tim?
Who do I call?
All right. Stay on the line.
Thank you.
And then we're going to give you Joe Sharp's phone number. Okay. Yeah. And then if you want, you got room down there still.
We definitely have room.
Free booth. Very good.
Exactly.
All right. Tim, there you go. We're connecting people here today. This is good. Tristan in Baltimore with a comment for us. Hello. Welcome.
Hi. Good afternoon, guys. Sir, first of all, I think you're fighting a good fight, and I appreciate it. And I'm a veteran, and one of the problems I had when I got out trying to find employment is when you enlist, the military promises you the world, state-of-the-art training, but the reality of it is that the government is farming out all the work on the more sophisticated systems to private contractors and are not giving the military enlisted personnel the training to fix and repair and operate them. And my training as a machinist repairman, I never got to touch a CNC machine, and that's what the world is today. And it has been for 30 years. So I got 30 years out-of-date training. And trying to train me after I was done, you know, you're behind the eight ball. What can you do to stem it off in the beginning and get us up to date?
Hey, Tristan, what machine was it you said you never touched?
CNC machine, computer and medically controlled machine.
Okay.
It's a milling machine.
And did so you had a bigger expectation from your military service that you'd get more training in that field?
Well, I was told that, you know, you're going to get out, you're going to get a job, no problem. And when I went out in my rate and looked for a job, and I told everybody I was a manual machinist, they laughed in my face. Nobody does that anymore.
How old are you?
I'm 32. I got out 8 years ago.
Do you have a job?
Sorry. Oh, my goodness. I'm getting old. I guess it's been almost 9 years ago now.
Okay. And do you have a job, Tristan? Tristan. What happened to him? Okay, he just dropped off, I guess.
I
asked you if you had a job presently. Oh, he's in and out. Okay, but anyway, I understand what he's saying. We've done programs also on the privatization of the military, private contractors. It's big-time stuff now, but he's got a point there. So.
Well, that's a huge issue for us right now, licensing certifications. We just had a summit a couple months ago. In that regards, we brought over 200 organizations and companies to discuss that, and we've connected them to the Pentagon to look at the MOS training or the job training that service members are receiving now and pair it up to what the civilian sector is looking for to ensure there's some partiality to the training and what the expectations are and try and narrow that gap so when a service member leaves the military, they can be directly gainfully employed or they can take some additional education type courses to get them up to speed. The other thing we're encouraging is a lot of companies to actually work with service members prior to their departure from the military. And a couple of companies like Microsoft, the Teamsters and the Pipefitters are actually doing that. So 6 months to a service member before they leave the military, they will get that training and they'll get that certification.
Sort of like an apprenticeship before
an apprenticeship,
right?
Right. Huh. For those service members that have ever served in Germany, you notice that a lot of the German companies do that. And that's one thing the American Legion is trying to encourage companies to do here.
Good.
To fill those jobs that require high skill type training and labor.
And IT, we keep hearing about all these jobs that are available in Maryland, thousands of jobs with the that are unfilled in IT, so that would be another area. Anyway, it's good to have you here, Joe Sharp. Nice to meet you. And Lou Celli, thank you very much for coming in. And please enjoy Baltimore and your convention. Again, the American Legion Convention, the 97th annual.
Correct.
Commences on Monday, but there's a parade Sunday afternoon. Hope for some nice weather. We'll take a break here for lunch. Please enjoy lunch today, you guys.
And we're having a two-day employment event
Let's say that. Emphasize that again. That's Monday and Tuesday, right?
That's Monday and Tuesday.
At the Baltimore Convention Center. That's important. That's more important than lunch, even.
Exactly.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks for having us.
All right, Joe. Thank you, Lou. Lunch today from Eddie's of Roland Park, offering gourmet sandwiches, soups, salads, and desserts at its two stores, one on Roland Avenue and the other on North Charles Street. Personal shopping catering, and gift baskets available at eddiesofrolandpark.com.